You tuned in to the Kojo Namdi Show on WAMU 88.5. Welcome. Today, it is your turn to share what's on your mind. What stories are sticking with you? What's sparking conversation in your community? You can start calling now, 800-433-8850. You can send us a tweet at Kojo Show or email to kojo@wamu.org. Immigration raids, do you approve of them? Do you have opinions on the recent changes to flight patterns at Reagan National or BWI or the upcoming 50th anniversary celebration of Apollo 11 or new D.C. legislation on summertime lemonade stands? 800-433-8850. It is your turn. You set the agenda with your phone calls. D.C. Councilmember Brianne Nadeau has introduced a bill to change the what goes on in men's restrooms and restaurants and public buildings that don't offer diaper changing tables. The legislation requires government buildings and businesses, including restaurants, to make changing tables available in all restrooms. This is your turn. You set the agenda. Joining me now by phone is Brandon Todd. He's a D.C. council member representing Ward 4. Brandon Todd, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Kojo.
You introduced legislation in the D.C. Council last week allowing kids to set up lemonade stands without a permit. Council member, what does this legislation do, and is it currently actually illegal in the district for kids to set up a lemonade stand?
I will. Thank you, Kojo. Well, I introduced the Lemonade Stand Amendment Act of 2019 to really allow minors in the District of Columbia to operate temporary businesses without having to obtain a basic business license or a vending site permit. So currently in the district, young people can do this for 30 days, but their income is limited to about $2,000. My bill would amend the Vending Regulation Act of 2009 to extend it to 100 days and let the income, there will be no income cap.
What about kids selling bottled water and candy? It's my understanding that's covered as well?
Absolutely. That will be covered. And what we've seen in the country, Kojo, and certainly our city has had these issues as well, has been harassment of minors engaging in entrepreneurial activities, such as running a lemonade stand or selling water. And we want to abate that. And so a few years ago, the council decriminalized selling water, you know, around the district and certainly, you know, in our city. But what we want to do now is remove the hurdle from our young entrepreneurs and allow them the ability to sell water, to set up lemonade stands. What I've seen in my ward is kids are raising money to buy books for their classrooms, or kids are raising money to plant flowers in their neighborhood to beautify our city and our communities. And so we want to encourage creativity and entrepreneurial spirit in our young people. And we want to remove any hurdles that exist, any regulatory hurdles.
And you mentioned, and the city paper article pointed out on Friday, that this exemption already existed under D.C. law. What is new in your legislation?
So this exemption, there is an exemption that exists, but what I'm doing is expanding what currently exists. So current law says there's a 30-day cap. When I'm saying that it should be at least 100 days, and that's what my bill would do, is it would expand what's currently the law. Also, the current law says that a young person, a minor, could not raise or get more than $2,000 in income from a lemonade stand or from selling water. What I'm saying is within that 100-day time frame that we would remove that $2,000 cap.
Well, we're talking with D.C. Councilmember Brandon Todd about his legislation, but remember, this is your turn. You mentioned an incident that happened here a few years ago in 2017. Four black teenagers were handcuffed and briefly detained by park police for selling bottled water on the mall. That sparked outrage by many who said, oh, white kids selling lemonade wouldn't be hassled, but black kids selling water get handcuffed. Was there any discussion of the racial angle to this among you and your council colleagues? And how about the National Mall and other federal land? Wouldn't park police still have jurisdiction on national park land, including the mall, and be able to enforce permitting rules?
So, no, that's a great question, Kojo. And the incident that occurred in 2017 was extremely unfortunate. And I don't think anyone in our city wants to see teens suffer the embarrassment of being arrested, especially for selling water or perhaps even lemonade or candy. And we will work really closely with our MPS partners, our federal partners, to make sure that what we put in law is followed all across the district.
Yes, because the National Park Service is a federal agency.
Absolutely. And what I've seen the last 4 years that I've been on the council, that the National Park Service has been more cooperative than I've ever seen them. I've been working with our federal partners for over a decade now, and we have a very committed, I believe, MPS staff that are committed to working with the district on a number of things. And I think that this will be one of them. Also, Kojo, summer is longer than 30 days, and the current law allows, you to set up a small business like this for 30 days. So summer is about 90 days. And so we want the kids to have the opportunity, if they want to sell lemonade or if they want to sell candy or if they want to sell bottled water for the entirety of summer, that they can do it. And what we also know is there are some kids who do this to be able to buy clothes to go back to school and buy all of their back to school needs. And so removing the regulatory hurdle, I think, is very, very important.
There are also people who are concerned about kids selling candy being exploited, that it can be tough to assess whether a kid selling candy is really raising money for a club or for school, or if something else is collecting, if someone else is collecting that money. Is that something the council has looked at, making sure that kids aren't being exploited?
Well, certainly, once we have the hearing, I will work to get a hearing scheduled this fall, or certainly as soon as possible, and we'll take a look at all of those things. 14 jurisdictions have already passed legislation that mirrors exactly what I've introduced. The governor of Texas recently signed legislation allowing this. And so this past May, actually, the governor of Texas signed a bill making it legal for kids to sell lemonade. New York introduced and passed a bill that would prohibit health inspectors from shutting down children's lemonade stands. And that was unanimously passed by the Senate Health Committee in New York. And so what we're seeing is a energy all around the country and states and jurisdictions that are really focused on how we can make sure that our young people have the tools they need to run successful small businesses.
I'd like to hear from our listeners on this. What do you think of the so-called lemonade legislation? Have you seen kids hassled by police for selling bottled water or candy? It is your turn. Councilmember Todd, Country Time Lemonade has been pushing for this kind of legislation across the country. They celebrated this win last week, but others are skeptical about the corporate seal of approval. We've got a tweet from Plague the Theologian who wrote, "Can you talk about the ridiculous corporate shill idiocy of Todd's legalized lemonade bill? It's a corporate marketing campaign from Country Time Lemonade. And also, D.C. already makes lemonade stands legal. Did you involve Country Time in developing this legislation?"
I did not involve Country Time. But what I know, when I go around all 20 neighborhoods from Petworth, where I live, to Riggs Park, to Shepherd Park, to Colonial Village and Chevy Chase, I see kids selling lemonade. And I want to remove the regulatory hurdles. I'm really excited that Country Time Lemonade has created a team that will help to pay fines and permits for kids across our country who want to run their own lemonade stands. And what that says to me is that there are corporations that want to encourage entrepreneurism from a young age. In D.C., we have thousands of small business owners. And if we can begin to cultivate that from 7 years old, from selling lemonade or selling water on your front porch or on the corner in your neighborhood, if we can take that to then having, future business owners in the District of Columbia, I think that's a win-win for everyone.
Well, and so cynics would say it's also good for Country Time sales, but I'm not a cynic, so I won't say that.
You know, when I set up a lemonade stand when I was a kid, I got a couple dozen lemons, some sugar and water, and I made my own lemonade. And I expect that that's what some kids are doing. And some kids may use Country Time lemonade. But I don't think we should, you know, take something good and turn it into something that isn't good.
How was your lemonade?
My lemonade was pretty good. I like
In whose opinion?
In my opinion.
I guess so.
I like my lemonade on the less sweet side.
Okay, cool. Brandon Todd is a D.C. council member representing Ward 4. Thank you for joining us.
Absolutely. Thank you, Kojo, for having me.
And remember, this is your turn. You can lead this conversation. Here's Louise in Washington, D.C. Louise, your turn.
Hi, Kojo. I'm a pedestrian, and I have some weeks ago on your program, I heard Ward 6 council member, is that Mr. Allen?
Yes, Charles Allen.
Yes, well, I heard him talking about how the traffic rules are always set up to favor the car. The car is the king of the road. And so he sounded as though he was concerned about pedestrians. And since I'm a pedestrian, I was very happy to hear what he said. And one of the things that I have always found useful, I don't know how expensive it is, but when the pedestrians have the leading green at an intersection, it makes it much easier for pedestrians to get across the street. And of course, the lines are helpful. And another thing that horrifies me is that the bicycles and scooters are allowed on the sidewalks. And so what I do, and they don't make a sound, you can't hear them coming. And what I do is pick a lane and try to stay in that same lane and don't meander around.
Well,
if I
you
have
seem...
to turn, I have to look behind me to see if somebody's coming. It's very frightening to have those things hurtling.
Well, I know that Charles Allen is one of those council members who's trying to make this a more walkable city, to make it more friendly to walkers. But you seem to be suggesting that it should just be cars and pedestrians. You don't like these scooters or these bicycles at all.
Well, I don't like them on the sidewalks.
Okay.
Where the pedestrians go. I think the pedestrians should come first on sidewalks.
Without a doubt. Thank you very much for your call.
Thank you, Kojo. Your show is wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you for calling. Remember, this is your turn. If you're a parent in the district, you know this already. Many of the men's restrooms in restaurants and public buildings in the city do not offer diaper changing tables, making it difficult for dads to take care of their young children in the same way mothers can. As I said earlier, D.C. Councilmember Brianna Doe has introduced a bill to change that. Her legislation requires government buildings and businesses, including restaurants, to make changing tables available in all restrooms. She said in an interview that the legislation is meant to make life easier for all families and make sure same-sex couples have equal access to this amenity. What do you think about that? Give us a call. Here is Faiza in Virginia. Faiza, your turn.
Yes, hi. I just heard about the water bottles that children sell or even young adults. When I had visitors in D.C., we had to walk a long way to see all the monuments and museums, and there was only one kiosk that they were selling water for $5 a bottle. And I remember there were some other guys who wanted to sell water closer to the museums, and they had to do it and escape because they were selling for $2. I don't know what's wrong with selling water bottle. There is no health hazard because it's not lemonade that is open or something like that. It's just water bottle. And there are so many tourists in D.C. that they need to get water very close to the museums or some other.
Well, thank you very much for sharing your thoughts with us, Faiza. Thank you for calling. Are you a parent of a young child? How have you dealt with the lack of changing tables in men's restrooms? Do you avoid certain businesses because they don't offer changing tables in the men's restrooms? We got an email from Joyce who said, I'm all for this new legislation because as a single mom, it's already a struggle to manage taking care of a small child, much less trying to enjoy your life outside of the house and visit and support local businesses. It would be horribly unhygienic to put an infant or toddler child on practically any bathroom floor I have ever seen. I hope this legislation applies to all genders of bathrooms, restrooms. It would be great to begin to show respect for growing families in this country. What do you think? Give us a call, 800-433-8850. It is your turn. I'm Kojo Namdi.
Hi, it's Diane. The next meeting of my book club is on Wednesday, May 31st at 1 p.m. Eastern. I'll host a discussion of Mad Honey by Jodi Picco and Jennifer Finney Boylan, followed by a conversation with the authors. Find out more and register at dianereem.org/bookclub.
Welcome back. It's your turn. So far, we've been talking lemonade stands and diaper-changing tables, but it is whatever you'd like to discuss. Here is AJ in Northwest D.C. AJ, your turn.
Good afternoon, Kojo. Unfortunately, it seems as though your guest has already left, but I'm interested in whether or not the lemonade stand bill is relegated to only the summer months, whether or not kids can do it year-round or do it in the winter. I'm also interested in whether or not it's limited to just those products, water, lemonade stand, and maybe some candy, or you know, can they pretty much sell anything?
Yeah, as far as I know, it's limited to water, lemonade, candy, and it extends for, I think, 100 days.
Interesting. Lastly, I don't know what the hoopla is about corporate sponsorship. I think that would be a great idea. I think we need to do that more often.
Well, I don't think there's actual corporate sponsorship, but the company that has been apparently pushing this country time, that has apparently been pushing this bill in a number of jurisdictions, raises some suspicions as to its own profit motive.
Certainly. But if I were a nonprofit organization in the District of Columbia, I'd want to get kids involved and I'd want to seek corporate sponsorship to assist, you know, without worrying about what their motivation is.
Best
interest of the children is left at hand.
I hear you. Well, thank you very much for your call. The federal government launched widespread immigration raids over the weekend. D.C. was not on the list of cities in this round, and we do not have any confirmed reports of detentions in our region yet. But undocumented immigrants and advocates say people are worried. They're on edge that raids could still happen here this week. There were reports, unverified at this point, that an Indian restaurant was raided recently in the district. Local advocates also petitioned hotels in the area not to serve as temporary detention centers. And Marriott International, the hotel chain based in Bethesda, said in a statement it would refuse any requests by immigration authorities as backup detention centers. Another hotel chain, Choice Hotel, similarly says it will decline any requests to house detained immigrants. Marriott notes they haven't been asked by immigration authorities to house detained immigrants, but it's something Immigration and Customs Enforcement have been doing elsewhere because of a lack of space in their regular detention facilities. So are you concerned about immigration raids in our area or not? Give us a call, 800-433-8850. Do you think local authorities should refuse to cooperate with immigration officials, or do you think they should? You can send us a tweet at Kojo Show or email to kojowamu.org, 800-433-8850. Here is Chris in Columbia Heights. Chris, your turn.
Kojo, thanks for taking my call. This is not ICE or immigration raid related. It's about the diaper-changing stations.
Sure.
In the men's bathrooms.
Yes.
So as a father of infant twins, I can't tell you how many times my wife and I have gone to places to find out that the men's room does not have changing stations, and it's kind of just frustrating and unfair to my wife that she's always the one. I mean, we don't go anywhere without having to change a diaper, as you can imagine. So totally in support of the proposal to add them to all men's rooms.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thanks for taking the call.
Diane called in to say she's a tourist who's visiting D.C. and was hassled by people trying to sell her water. She says she doesn't support people selling water in public places. Well, Diane differs from most of the other views we've heard on that issue so far, but what's yours? Here is Charles in Potomac, Maryland. Charles, your turn.
Hey, good afternoon. I'll make two quick comments and then listen off the air. So the first is the amount of plastic bottles that are thrown away after water consumption is already sort of out of control. So I do worry about the selling of water versus the selling of lemonade, which is typically in cups. And I do think we need maybe water filling stations could be an option rather than this idea of selling more trash. The second is, in the past few years, there's a couple of groups that get kids to sell candy, and the groups have a semi-legitimate purpose. The kids get some sort of trip out of it or points, but someone else is making the profit. And they have sort of nebulous-looking credentials when they go door-to-door selling candy. So I wonder if this new policy might be abused by people that are already trying to take advantage of some kids, where it's not the kids making the money, it's someone else.
That's one of the concerns that has been expressed. And when we raised it with D.C. Councilmember Brandon Todd, he said that's one of the things he will consider when he's having hearings on this bill that he has proposed. So we'll, I guess, find out more about that as we go along. But thank you very much for your call.
Thank you.
Remember, it is your turn. You, too, can give us a call, 800-433-8850. Have you participated in Know Your Rights trainings? What do you think the community should do if D.C. does become the target of ICE raids this week? Here now is Kevin in Virginia. Kevin, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Kojo. I wanted to bring up, there was an article in the Post this week about how Minneapolis has modified their 2040 zoning plans, their master plan, I guess, to enable more single-family homes to be converted to duplexes and triplexes. And I think it also enables more condos and high-rises in transit areas. And I was wondering, what's the lay of the land in the DMV? Are there individuals or even council members proposing a similar approach in Arlington or in the district?
In the district, we complicate things a little bit more than that. Here's how. In an ongoing saga, the Historic Preservation Office has recommended that the residents of the Anacostia Public Housing neighborhood Barry Farm not be approved by the Historic Preservation Review Board as a historical landmark. Residents filed the application in the hopes that they would be able to maintain the structure of the neighborhood after Barry Farm was selected to be part of the city's New Communities Initiative. In their application, the residents claimed that the homes in the neighborhood had important ties to the Civil War, World War II, the landmark Supreme Court decision, Brown v. Board of Education, and welfare activism in the 1960s. The office, which serves as professional advisors to the Historic Preservation Review Board, justified its decision by stating that the houses currently in the neighborhood are not connected to the Civil War, Brown v. Board of Education, and that the tenant activism in the 60s was not especially unique. The report also states that while the Barry farmhouses were used as public housing for African Americans in the post-World War II period, the houses no longer meet the standard of physical quality. Well, Kevin, obviously that doesn't answer the question you were asking. It was just an indication of how complicated things can get in the District of Columbia when we're talking about housing. But yes, we do have a zoning commission here in the District of Columbia. But I have not known of anything that the Zoning Commission has done recently to encourage higher density. What has been encouraging higher density in this region has been, of course, metro stations, where people and developers have been encouraged to build around metro stations. But that apparently is not what is happening in Minneapolis, is it?
No, I mean, obviously they already had transit. This is, you know, well inside of the kind of the transit zone. Or if you think, I live near East Falls Church, it's predominantly single-family homes in certain areas just outside of that metro. You know, it's zoned so that one could not build something denser. Okay. So the question is, if it might be something you could do in some show, is what does, you know, some council member think of these things, and what is their approach? Because Minneapolis is taking a particular approach to try to reduce their housing crisis, just the price of housing going up tremendously.
And maybe a listener of a member of the Zoning Commission might be listening and will be able to call us to clarify that. Kevin, thank you very much for your call. Here is John in Washington, D.C. John, your turn.
Hey, Kojo, I just wanted to go back to the bathroom thing. And one of the things I love about the district is that you have intersex bathrooms. You can go any of them and use the bathroom. I hated it, you know, to take my daughter in the bathroom with me. But even then, there were no changing tables.
I know of establishments with intersex bathrooms and no changing tables in either.
But the malls are good. And I always say to parents, you know, when you're traveling with kids, especially going out of town, if you want a reliable bathroom, like if you're going up to New York City, the best place to go is the Apple Store. They have the best bathroom. They have everything in there. And so, I mean, but the other ones, they just do not have the changing tables at all. It makes us look sexist, you know. Why are we getting all the benefits and not having to deal with the kid, you know what I mean?
That's true. Well, thanks for sharing your travel secrets with us, too.
You're welcome. Take care, Kojo.
Thank
you. Glad to have you back.
On the issue of what's been going on at Barry Farm, do you think public housing like Barry Farm should be a historical landmark? What do you think should qualify a building as a historical landmark? Should the city be able to renovate Barry Farm without the consent of current residents? On now to Christina in Virginia. Christina, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, hi, Kojo. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I wanted to comment on on ICE enforcing our laws and coming in and taking people and moving them out of the country after they've gone through the whole judicial process and they've gone before a judge and they've been ordered to leave. I think that ICE is just enforcing our laws. The United States needs to have borders. And you can't just suspend laws for people, for, you know, certain groups of people. It has to apply across the board. So I just wanted to say that I feel that ICE is getting is vilified and demonized. And these are people who are merely doing their job. If they abuse somebody, if they hurt somebody, sure, they should be held accountable for that. But just for doing their job and for enforcing our laws, I think they should be supported.
How about
and applauded?
How about cities and jurisdictions which see a lot of these undocumented workers as residents of their communities, many of them working, tax-paying citizens, many of them with families with young children? Should the local jurisdictions support ICE being able to go into those homes, taking parents out of the homes and leaving children
there? If they have gone through the whole process and they've gone before a judge and a judge has said, I'm sorry, but we're not going to grant you asylum because you're not a legitimate asylum seeker. Yes, I do. And I'm sorry to say that. But we also need to look at people who come, you know, we're being flooded with unskilled workers. What does this do to Americans who want to work? We need immigration. I understand that. We need workers, but they need to do it right. They need to stand in line and wait their turn. There are people from a lot of countries who I have friends who have relatives in other countries who want to come over here, but they haven't gotten the permission. They don't just come across. My father was a first generation immigrant.
No, but my question to you was whether or not local jurisdiction. Let me interrupt you for a second. My question to you is if ICE authorities are conducting a raid in the District of Columbia and ask for the assistance of the police department of the District of Columbia, should the police department, which is a local agency not involved in enforcing federal regulations, should the District of Columbia Police Force assist the ICE authorities in removing those people?
Absolutely, yes. Absolutely. And not put our ICE officers in danger. Absolutely, they should assist them.
Why would the D.C. police assisting them be avoiding putting the ICE officers in danger? ICE officers themselves are trained law enforcement officials.
Okay, you know, if they need assistance, I think the assistance should be given to them because they are enforcing the laws of this country. Well, now, what I have a problem with is for people to say how to evade the ICE officers, where we have elected officials who say, well, you know, this is how you avoid them. You don't have to let them into your home. Well, okay, that's the law, too. But I think we need to support the ICE officers. They are American citizens who are doing what can be a very dangerous job.
Okay, Christina, thank you very much. Thank you very much for your call.
We help them out? Okay, thank you.
You do have to move on. Here's a slightly different point of view from Fred in Mount Pleasant. Fred, your turn.
Oh, hi, Kojo. Thank you. Yeah, well, I disagree with the previous caller on so many fronts. I mean, I have been involved in some of the trainings, both for a company, undocumented workers, and for the training about what to do if ICE shows up. And I guess, first of all, I think that I'm carrying in groceries. That's why I'm breathing hard. First of all, D.C. government should live up to what it says it is, which is a sanctuary city. It's not yet really that, but they should absolutely not cooperate with ICE.
Why do you think undocumented immigrants should not be arrested and deported by ICE?
Well, that's a slightly different question than what you just asked, because you asked whether local officials,
yes, that
whether
was,
the
that
city
was,
ought to back them up.
Well, that was my question to the previous. That was my question to the previous call.
I'm sorry?
That was my question to the previous caller. My question to you, who is against cities cooperating, my question to you is, why do you think ICE should not conduct raids on undocumented immigrants who have been identified for deportation?
Okay. I'll try to be brief. But first of all, this is a, quote, problem that has been so blown out of proportion for political, racist, and white nationalist reasons by the Trump administration. They want everybody to be afraid of these poor people who come out of desperation. And we are criminalizing poverty. That's what we're really doing, and criminalizing being exploited.
So,
and our country has had so much to do with creating the crises in Mexico and Central America that have caused these problems in the first place. NAFTA, for instance, pushed 1 million farm workers off their land because the U.S. was subsidizing corn farmers, and pushed a couple of other 1 million people who relied on that business, you know, across the border.
Okay.
Our wars, which we fought, you know, which we did in El Salvador and Guatemala.
Gotcha.
The environmental policies are forcing people off the land.
Gotcha. You are fundamentally
a unnamed coup in the unclaimed coup in Honduras has created.
Gotcha. You are fundamentally opposed to the ICE raids. Thank you very much. Do have to move on. Here's Patty in Alexandria. Patty, your turn.
Hi. I was just in Baltimore trying to check into the Marriott Inner Harbor.
Yes.
And the lines for waiting for rooms was insane. There were no service people to clean the rooms, to turn over the rooms. So Marriott was clearly impacted by the threat of these ICE raids.
Wow, hadn't heard that one before. Thank you very much for sharing that story with us. It's a story that somebody might want to pursue. Got to take a short break. When we come back, we'll continue this edition of Your Turn. I'm Kojo Nam. Welcome back. It is your turn, but got to mention this. Last week, the Red Cross reported a blood supply shortage in the region. The organization is urging volunteers, particularly those with the universal blood type O, which can be used on patients of any blood type, to donate as soon as possible. Well, do you donate blood regularly? Do you intend to? Back now to the phones. Here's Candace in Washington, D.C. Candace, your turn.
Hi, I just wanted to say that I completely disagree with the first lady who was talking about saying that she thought it was okay for the local police to be going out and assisting with rounding up the people for deportation. It's just not appropriate. The federal government does not have the power or the authority to come in and force the state government to operate its mission for them. They have enumerated powers and everything else is to the states, and the states, they just don't have to do it, and they shouldn't be expected to do it. So I just wanted to point that out.
Candace, thank you for your call. Here's Brandon in Northern Virginia on the same topic. Brandon, your turn.
Hi, thank you for taking my call, Kojo. I just wanted to suggest that some of these organizations and groups, and even just concerned citizens, instead of signing a device.
Brandon, you're dropping off. Are you still there? Brandon, you've dropped off completely. I don't know where Brandon disappeared to, but feel free to call back. Let's stay with that topic with Marcus in Leesburg, Virginia. Marcus, your turn.
Hello. I just wanted to mention that, you know, and then somebody else touched this earlier with the Marriott story, right? A lot of these immigrants, while they are illegal, they make up a huge part of our labor force, and they're not necessarily taking jobs away from legal Americans. A lot of these jobs are jobs that most Americans don't want. These are hardworking people. When you see them work, they work just as hard as everybody else. They give back to the community. I don't think it's as simple as, you know, labeling them illegal immigrants, because they do give back. They do work hard. And I think, you know, we owe them something because of their hard work and because their willingness to help the community and to help the country.
And you do express a widespread view that the jobs that they are doing are not jobs that are being coveted, so to speak, by Americans. But there are others who say then they are costing Americans jobs. But thank you very much for your call. On diaper changing, Katie emails, if all bathrooms became non-gendered and at least one had a changing station, this would be a non-issue. The bill should require non-gendered bathrooms and not focus specifically on changing stations in men's rooms. This just reinforces a binary gender divide. On now to Sarah on the Lower Eastern Shore, who wants to talk restrooms. Sarah, your turn.
I agree with a person about the changing stations, because I have handicapped twins who have cerebral palsy, and now they're 20 years old, and I'm thrilled that they're putting changing stations in men's rooms and equal opportunity and access and all that. But I think everyone has forgotten that handicapped children grow up and they get bigger, and those little 50-pound fold-down changing stations no longer work. And I wish somebody, I don't have time or access, but I wish someone could go to Congress and say that in every building there should be like a family room that would have a lower table, because even children's hospitals have family rooms for changing, but the changing table is up high. So my daughter weighs 135 pounds. It's a little hard to halt her up into a changing station to get her clean.
Yeah,
so
I can understand
I'm
that.
I'm just saying, changing stations for adults, they're needed.
Thank you very much for reminding us about that. Starting tomorrow night, the Washington Monument will be lit up with a full-scale projection of the Saturn V rocket, the vessel that carried Neil Armstrong to the moon 50 years ago this weekend. The celebrations continue as the National Air and Space Museum will be airing a 17-minute show that will tell the story of the 1969 moon landing alongside the projections on the Washington Monument. Do you plan on checking out the projection on the monument? Do you remember the moon landing? Tell us about your experience. Everybody I know who was alive and at that time and can remember seems to remember exactly where they were when the moon landing took place. You might want to share that with us. Here is Neo in Silver Spring, Maryland. Neo, your turn.
Yeah, I just wanted to back up a little bit of history for Barry's Farm.
Yep.
Back after the Civil War, black people had no place to go. And there was black people were camping out at Meridian Hill. And a Union general went to them and said, would you consider moving over to Anacostia? They said yes. And the government hired a white person to go to Barry's farm. There was a Mr. Barry who had died and passed his land on to his children. this white intermediary went to the children and said, I'd like to buy the farm. Well, they sold them the farm, and after they sold them the farm, the government started selling land to the black people that had been living on Meridian Hill, making it the first black settlement in Washington, D.C.
So you believe that the Historic Preservation Board erred?
I'm not saying anything about that. I don't know, you know, what that is, but I just know that that's what happened.
Okay, yeah, because they recommended, the Historic Preservation Office has recommended that it not be approved as a historical landmark. You seem to be suggesting that it is, in your view, a historical landmark.
It's the first black settlement where blacks bought land, acre or two at a time.
Well, so far that's been just a recommendation that it not be recognized as such. We'll have to see how that turns out. But thank you very much for your call. On now to Tony in Washington. Tony, your turn.
Hi, good afternoon, Kojo. I just want to say you asked before whether MPD and local police should be supporting the immigration raids, and I just think it makes me sick to my stomach, the idea that we would. I think our police force, which is charged with protecting everyone in the city, that we are all made less safe when substantial portions of our city fear calling the police. They've got a specific mission, as the caller before was saying. And, you know, these are members of our community that can get ripped out overnight, and MPD can't do its job in protecting us from everything else if everyone's afraid to call them because they think they're going to get snatched up either appropriately or inappropriately by a federal law enforcement organization.
Okay, Tony, thank you very much for your call. Metro is testing a new camera system in an attempt to crack down on Metro fare evasion, which is estimated to cost the agency $10 million this year. Although fare evasion is still a criminal offense in Maryland and Virginia, the act was decriminalized in the district last year, downgrading it to a civil offense. Do you think new Metro cameras will stop fare evaders? Why do you think Metro has such high rates of fare evasion? Is the service overall just too expensive? Here now to Sandy in Gaithersburg. Sandy, your turn.
Hi, Kojo. Thank you for taking my call. I was calling about the selling of candy and cookies and stuff by different kids.
Yes.
I was a naturalist in Montgomery County for 30 years and worked with Boy Scouts with their Eagle Scout projects, and they're required to raise money and donations and selling cookies or selling mulch or whatever. They do different projects, and they use it to help pay for their Eagle Scout project. The Girl Scouts sell cookies. And I know for a fact that the kids get credit for selling the cookies, and it goes towards paying expenses. So if they're going to a national conference or a camp or something, the money for that individual gets used to cover expenses so that if they otherwise couldn't go to camp, they've raised money. And I work with 4-H, and the same thing is true for them. They use it to go to national conferences or whatever. And, you know, the kids are benefiting. It goes on their resume, and they're getting the benefit of attending a conference or doing something educational. And it doesn't seem like, I mean, I don't live in Washington, D.C., but I know that those organizations are also in Washington, D.C.
Okay.
If you pass the law, would it eliminate all of that?
I do not know for sure, but I don't think it will eliminate all of that.
Okay.
They'll have to discuss it in the hearings.
I know somebody who, one of her daughters,
They're concerned about kids being exploited by organizations that are not necessarily on the up and up. But we'll have to see what happens. Allow me to move on to Camille in Centerville. Camille, your turn.
Oh, Kojo, I'm going to talk really fast. One, Dr. Asperger in the 19-teens, 20s, and 30s, he managed to escape the Holocaust, saved by German doctors. He was Jewish. But there was literally an epidemic of autism and spectrum symptoms among particularly boys during that time way before vaccines. Nobody talks about that, but you, I'm sure, can do the research and present it to the public, as you so often do. Another is housing in Northern Virginia. You have all these organizations that are nonprofit, literally. They call it Housing First. What that means is that they can put on their books and show, oh, look, we gave these people housing. If you give two drunks and alcoholics a place to live, they're still drunks and alcoholics. There needs to be some requirements. If you're going to give them sort of like a tiny house, shed, and something like that, but if you're going to really deal with a real homeowner who's going to rent their property, please don't stick people that are not going to work. They're going to fall down the stairs where the police and the ambulances are going to be there every other damn week.
Well,
and
actually,
another is, yes,
actually, Camille, I think most homeless people do not fall into that category. The most homeless people are homeless families. And that's who tends to be the priority of officials trying to accommodate. But I'm afraid we're running out of time very quickly, and I may only have time for one more. Jackie in Silver Spring. Jackie, your turn.
Hi, Kojo. Thanks so much for taking my call. I thought it was important to point out, you know, people want to talk about illegal immigration and that people should be following the process and the ramifications of that. But I think what's not discussed often enough are the fact that the immigration system in general is broken. And even the legal means of immigration have significant economic impact. So I think specifically about the EB-5 visa program, which was intended to allow people that are investing in businesses in the U.S. to basically get kind of like a fast-track visa, but has been exploited by people to purchase real estate. So if you look at a state like California, even in the DMV, where real estate prices have really been driven up beyond what's reasonable for market rates because foreign investors are really buying visas, not necessarily real estate. You know, there are some definite real impacts even for the legal routes of immigration that are available.
Got it.
I don't think that we talk about that enough.
Thank you very much for your call. We have time for Jane on the Eastern Shore. Jane, you got about 30 seconds. Go.
I'm going to talk fast. I'm a Native American to the woman who called in. Here it goes. Number one, I'd love to see your kids, when they become teens, come out here and pick us some crabs and get us our strawberries and melons because we don't have enough workers. And number two, I don't know what channel she's listening to, but it's fake news, man. There are more than enough jobs.
Okay, thank you very much for your call. I don't think her children have a crab-picking history ahead of them at this point because I see very few Americans who do that in these days. Jane, thank you very much for your call, and I'm afraid that's all the time we have. Today's Your Turn was produced by Kayla Hewitt and Ingelisa Schrobsdorf. Coming up tomorrow, we'll learn about the 1919 race riots that engulfed the district in 5 days of violence exactly 100 years ago this week. And people re-entering society after serving time in prison face many challenges. We'll talk to the people behind a new program that seeks to give former inmates better employment options through business and entrepreneurship training. That all starts tomorrow at noon. Until then, thank you for listening, and thanks to my assistant today, Naima Paul. I'm Kojo Nandi.
The Kojo Nandi Show is produced by Ruth Tam, Mark Gunnery, Margaret Barthel, Sydney Grannon, and Maura Curry. Our managing producer is Ingelisa Schrobsdorf. Our senior producer is Mana Kashvi. Our engineer is Josephine Neonai, and our intern is Kayla Hewitt. For past shows and more content, visit kojoshow.org.
Thanks for listening to The Kojo Namdi Show, and if you're already a member of WAMU 88.5, thank you for your support. If not, it's easy to give online at wamu.org. Just click the donate button, and thanks.